This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
One thing about hydrogen is that it is non-toxic. It's not a greenhouse gas. You can spill it on the ground. You can put it in the water. It's not harmful to anybody. We can all breathe it up to 3, 4, 5%. And there's no toxic effect at all. So that's the real brilliance or beauty of hydrogen.
One of the most alluring answers to the climate change conundrum is a transition from a fossil fuel-based economy to a hydrogen-based economy. As hydrogen power technology continues to evolve, it certainly seems like a promising way to decarbonize our energy system. But what are the practical considerations? Unlike carbon-based energy sources, there are no natural reservoirs of hydrogen on the planet. Moreover, it must be bound to a carrier like natural gas or water. This week's guest on Sea Change Radio is hydrogen vehicle fueling technology expert Robert Boyd. We discuss this relatively clean and plentiful resource and what he and others are doing to help get us over the production and distribution hurdles that stand between us and a shift to a hydrogen-based economy. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Robert Boyd. He's the founder of Boyd Hydrogen. It's a consulting firm, and he's worked in the gas industry, the hydrogen gas industry, since 1977. Bob, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you very much, Alex. I'm happy to be here.
Hydrogen has been one of these alternative fuels that we've heard about as like almost cold fusion. It's one of those silver bullet kind of technologies. It's a very plentiful resource, but for many reasons, it hasn't really taken off. Why don't you first spell out the promise and the upside of hydrogen in your estimation?
Alex, hydrogen has been promising for a couple hundred years. It was in the 1860s that they really started to be able to produce hydrogen whenever they wanted to by cracking water with electrical power. It's been mysterious. It's certainly been part of the fantasy series that Jules Verne wrote about in the 1860s. It was actually first discovered in like the 1750s, but they didn't know what hydrogen was. They didn't know oxygen, hydrogen. They had to develop the periodic table. That took 200 years from the middle 1700s to the middle 1800s. The modern hydrogen era really began with the moonshot. When Kennedy said, let's go to the moon, he got his best people together and they said, well, if you're going to go, you need to take liquid hydrogen on board as a fuel because it's half the weight of rocket fuel. So your engines are half the power, everything is half. It's not everything, but it's definitely much better than carrying kerosene. So with that beginnings, now we have liquid hydrogen. We have about 250 tons a day of hydrogen liquefied and trucked to various companies. And some of those, that's fairly economical, particularly on the East Coast, where most of the liquid comes from renewable resources. So you can truck in liquid hydrogen, you put, a 5,000-10,000 gallon liquid tank on the ground, pump it up to high pressure and put it into little forklifts. So that's sort of an early market for fuel cells.
How long has that been occurring?
Well, it's been going on for about 15 years. There's a Canadian firm, Ballard Power, and a spinoff of Ballard produced a lot of small 1.5 kilowatt fuel cell assemblies that get put into a sort of a hybrid battery pack that just you take your regular lead acid battery pack out and you drop in one of these fuel cell packs and away you go.
Tell about some of the developments in the last three decades since you've been in the industry.
Well, it's funny. When I started in the industry in 77, I was actually a bit of a motorhead in high school. And I had rebuilt cars and British cars, actually. And so I'm pretty familiar with vehicle technology. And I have a strong history in that. But I had known about fuel cells at the time. But I'd never imagined that I'd actually be working where we today, where we have vehicles running around on hydrogen. First thing about fuel cell is it's a bit of a misnomer. When we talk about fuel cells in racing cars, for instance, a fuel cell would be like a bladder. It would be a plastic bag that would hold the fuel in a race car, and you could then make that conformal. So your tank could keep kind of a compartment that's all different goofy shapes, and you just fill a bladder. And so they call that a fuel cell. But that's different from what we call a fuel cell that takes hydrogen and air or oxygen out of the air and makes power. So a fuel cell that converts either natural gas or directly or hydrogen directly into power is a fuel cell. And those can be molten carbonate. They can be phosphoric acid. They can be PEM. PEM is a proton exchange membrane, which is a solid state, low temperature fuel cell, which we use in cars. And that's really the subject of what we're talking about today, are PEM fuel cells running on hydrogen, pure hydrogen that's stored in the car in a compressed form, and then drawn out as you need it to make electrical power directly at very high efficiency that charges an electrical system on a vehicle.
But the earliest stage of the supply chain, of the production, how does it get created?
Well, hydrogen today, the most economical way you make, and most of the hydrogen today is made from natural gas. And so you take natural gas out of the pipeline, you take one molecule that's basically methane, CH4 plus H2O, and you should get about four molecules of hydrogen, but some of that hydrogen is consumed in the process of transforming it. So you get about 2.3 molecules of hydrogen for every molecule of natural gas or methane that goes into the reactor. So that's how we make most of our hydrogen today.
Would we need to if we ran out of natural gas? Are there other ways of could we mine hydrogen from H2O, from other forms?
Oh, sure. We could also make hydrogen directly from petroleum, and we do. So in your refinery, and you might ask, why do we make hydrogen? Why do we use hydrogen? And we either make ammonia out of it for fertilizer, or we use it for cleaning up the diesel fuel or cleaning up the gasoline, because the crude oil we get has a lot of sulfur in it. And the process of desulfurizing the petroleum products is a hydrogen process. So you use the hydrogen to take the sulfur out of the fuel oil and make clean fuel.
Cleaning up in inside engines or in
refineries? The refinery, right. You need to get the sulfur out of the fuel because you want a catalytic converter on your car, and the platinum in the catalytic converter gets contaminated by sulfur. So you really don't need sulfur if you want to have dirty fuel, which you could go over to China and you can breathe that air over there, and you can see what happens when you have no catalytic converters and you have no pollution controls on your emission devices. And we live in this country, and we're quite lucky to be here with the pollution control systems we have on board our cars. But we couldn't have that without taking the sulfur out of the fuel, and that happens at the refinery, and it costs money.
And hydrogen, how does it stack up to natural gas and combustible engines in terms of its emissions?
Well, it's funny because BMW built a gorgeous Series 7. It was a V10, a four-door saloon with room for six, and it was a dual fuel. It had liquid hydrogen on board that was gasified and put into the combustion engine, and it also had gasoline. It was a beautiful implementation that would... Well, for instance, when you start your car up, the catalyst is cold. So the exhaust gas has to be used to heat the catalyst. So when you first start your internal combustion engine on gasoline, you're putting out a lot of pollution until that catalyst gets nice, hot, and toasty. So the BMW would start off on hydrogen automatically. And so you'd have a much reduced, you'd have no carbon monoxide output, you'd have no methane output, you'd have no hydrocarbon output. All that stuff that gets cleaned up in the exhaust system in the catalyst, you don't have that with hydrogen. So it would start on hydrogen, get the catalyst nice and hot, and then it would switch over to gasoline.
So this was a hydrogen hybrid that BMW developed?
That's correct. It was a dual fuel internal combustion spark ignition engine. And it was a wonderfully implemented concept.
kind of the reverse of what you see with a lot of waste vegetable oil engines, where they start on the diesel or biodiesel until it gets hot, and then they switch over to the second tank where they have the waste vegetable
oil. Exactly, exactly. Where you're integrating the two fuels, and you're using, you know, the best of each or the worst of each to sort of complement and balance each other. That's right.
We gotta stand a little closer to what it is we're leaning on. Who was it that first said it? Could it be he could be wrong? Now the pilgrims and the natives having dinner on the lawn. I think if I was ever king, I would buy a censorship. Where the only books upon the shelves were the ones that I had read. Oh, and put them up in order, send my photo down the spine. To tell the story of the living without forgetting those who died. And I would die. Said it, yeah, the one who said it best. You got to L-O-V-E your neighbors, at least the ones who are still left. We gotta stand a little closer to the lessons that we learned.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with Robert Boyd. He's the founder of Boyd Hydrogen. Bob, we've talked a little bit about these hybrids, but how does a hydrogen fuel cell work?
Well, a hydrogen fuel cell vehicle is, the best example I can give you is like a Chevy Volt. So a Chevy Volt has about 15 kilowatt hours of battery power, and it can drive about 50 miles on that 15 kilowatt hours of power. It also has a supplemental power supply, and it's got a gasoline engine that drives a generator. So when you're running your battery down, the engine turns on and charges the battery as you're driving. Now, some of that power that comes right off of the generator that's tied to the gasoline motor goes directly to the wheels. It never goes into the battery. So it meets the demand. If you're driving down the road at 90 miles an hour, your electric engine, your gasoline engine is running pretty much at full power, trying to, you know, propel you down the road. But if you're just tooling around town, you can run off a battery. So same thing works with a fuel cell. Throw away the gasoline, throw away the gas engine, throw away the generator, and you add a fuel cell and a hydrogen. So the fuel cell directly charges the battery or the drive wheels whenever you need power. And that's about it.
And are these being developed right now, just pure hydrogen vehicles?
Oh, sure. If you could
give us some examples of how it's being used.
To plug a group, you could go to the CaliforniaFuelCellPartnership.org website, and you could click on vehicles, and you could see a whole, at least a dozen different vehicles that are being, well, I shouldn't say at least, I'd say 6-8 different vehicles that are currently on the road from various manufacturers.
And how are these vehicles being fueled?
They're being fueled by a very limited number of fueling stations.
And what about the combustibility of hydrogen? Isn't that something that people have thrown up as a red flag, that this is a highly combustible fuel? Is that an issue, the combustibility of hydrogen?
This is the time to cue in the Captain Beefheart song, The Blimp, and show, you know, the images of people jumping out of the Hindenburg. I always like to say that the only people that died in the Hindenburg were the people that jumped.
Yeah, there was like a lot of survivors. I just read about that.
Most people rode it down and jumped off, just climbed right off. And the only people that got burned by diesel fuel.
It gave hydrogen a bad name.
It certainly
gave
me, I must say. But there are some unique properties about hydrogen, mostly the small molecule size. So if you have a leak, you have to have everything tight. You know, it's not like piping. Most of our fuels today, I hate to say, are leaky. You know, we have leaky storage underground storage tanks. We have leaks here and we have leaks there.
So with that in mind, if we just assuming human error and leaks, can hydrogen be a viable fuel in a leaky environment?
I think we need to stop talking about hydrogen as a fuel and think of it as an energy carrier.
As a complement to other alternative fuels?
You can take any fuel and convert it into hydrogen. And then you can use that hydrogen, transport it to where you want to use it. And then as a, so think of it as a fuel for mobility.
You could take algae fuel and convert it into hydrogen. And what would be the advantage of doing that?
Well,
more efficiency.
I'm glad you asked that. Okay. One thing about hydrogen is that it is non-toxic. It's not a greenhouse gas. You can spill it on the ground. You can put it in the water. It's not harmful to anybody. We can all breathe it up to 3-5%, and there's no toxic effect at all. So, you know, that's the real brilliance or beauty of hydrogen. That, and that it's the water cycle. You take water, you crack it into hydrogen and oxygen, you react it back into water. So it's not like the carbon cycle. The carbon cycle is really sort of a stored solar energy. You have eons and eons of solar energy focused on the earth, making green things. It all gets folded into the earth, and that's our real source of oil. All that carbon that's in the ground is yesterday's solar energy. It's a nice storehouse. We're very lucky to have it. But as we take it out, it goes into the atmosphere as CO2. So the carbon cycle is sort of a one-way trip for us. It took a long time to put that nice oil and coal and what we call fossil fuel into the ground. But we can take it out fast. We can take it out slow. But the hydrogen cycle is just that. It's water cracking to oxygen and hydrogen and then going back to water. So it's a great energy carrier.
But even though you're making hydrogen out of something a few degrees cleaner than oil in natural gas, it's still coming from a fossil fuel source and all the issues that accompany it, right?
Sure. If we take the natural gas, let's just say a unit of energy, $10 worth of natural gas, and stick it into a bus, the bus might go, I'm guessing, 5 miles, maybe 10. I don't know. If we take the same amount of natural gas, convert it to hydrogen and put it into a fuel cell hybrid electric bus, the bus goes twice the distance on the same amount of natural gas. So if we want to cut the use of energy by 50%, we can just convert natural gas to hydrogen. That's to start. Now, if we keep driving the same miles, that means we use half the amount of fuel and we put out half the greenhouse gas emissions. So that's just off the top. If we just convert to the most economical way of making hydrogen today. Now, for this hydrogen economy to work, we have to have applications. We have to have the vehicles. And the vehicles have to be fueled with the most economical fuel possible. Yet, once we've got the vehicles, then you can look at, say, a country like Iceland. Now, Iceland has huge amounts of geothermal power. Huge, huge. They have captured their geothermal power, and they make heat for everybody, heat for all the factories. They make so much heat, they then make electricity out of it. And the electricity is so inexpensive that they put the most intensive industries, power-intensive industries, like, say, smelting aluminum. So those folks over in Iceland, they can convert their geothermal power into hydrogen. They can fuel their entire transportation needs with hydrogen. They never have to import oil ever again. They have all the power they need, and they can make hydrogen out of that geothermal power.
Are they doing that?
They are going to do that. They have a plan to do that. And by the midterm this century, by 2060, they will be doing it. They will have all of their cars on hydrogen. They'll have all their cars on hydrogen probably by 2025.
You do, don't If you ever find yourself wanting to know more about the music we play here on Sea Change Radio, go to seachangeradio.com and click on the Music tab at the top of the page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with Robert Boyd. He's the founder of Boyd Hydrogen, and he's worked in the hydrogen gas industry since 1977. Robert, we spoke about hydrogen being used in transportation, but how can hydrogen be used in battery technology?
So you can store energy in a hydrogen in a hydride. So you take a nickel metal hydride material, and instead of having it be a closed mass system that you charge and discharge, you can have it, you can charge it with hydrogen and have it discharge power. And then you can recharge it with hydrogen and have it discharge power. So that type of hydride storage works very well for rechargeables. So that's a market that will happen after we have permits and standards, codes and standards to allow those type of things to go on aircraft and be able to, we need to be able to have hydrogen fuel cells in the overhead compartment. And so there's a lot of work being done behind the scenes by the people that are working in the handheld and portable device to sort of get these devices tested, proven, get standards written, international standards written, so that then these devices can be packaged and sold and on the world market. And so with the portable devices, we're probably, I don't know where we are specifically. I kind of have a broad understanding of where we are with the industry, and you could look at angstrom.com and see what their technology is out of British Columbia. They've been recently purchased by BIC, the folks that make the lighters. So this packaged energy deal is a big deal. It's a big deal for Africa, where, you know, bringing clean, zero-emission power and LED, you know, high-tech lighting, low-power lighting systems combined with portable hydrogen cylinders and things like that, taking it in and having clean, green power in third-world countries is a big, huge potential market.
So with batteries, but what kind of scale are we talking about in terms of hydrogen someday powering cities?
Well, you know, it's hard to imagine how this all scales up. You know, how that economy evolves is hard to tell right now, but certainly pipelines are in the future. We have hydrogen distributed today by pipelines. And right now, there's you can buy, and Toyota has recently purchased a giant fuel cell. It's about a megawatt of power. It might actually be 2 megawatts. It's a big one. Thinking maybe 1 or 2 40-foot ISO containers worth of fuel cells. And it sits in their parking lot, and it's tied to the hydrogen pipeline that feeds Los Angeles. And so when the power costs go really high in a hot summer day, when demand goes really high, then they can take hydrogen from the pipeline, and right on their site, they can make a 1 or 2 megawatts of power for 3 or 4 hours a day to sort of satisfy peak demand.
We all kind of can understand the economics of gallon of gas in our minds. So let's get back to the transportation issue for a minute. What kind of scale do we need for hydrogen in terms of ubiquity for it to become cost effective and price competitive with normal unleaded gas that we use today?
Probably the best example right now is over in Emeryville, Oakland, Berkeley at AC Transit. they have 12 fuel cell buses. They have hydrogen that is roughly about $10 a kilogram. Which is the equivalent of perhaps $4 a gallon of diesel in terms of how the...
which is what diesel costs right now.
Right, exactly. From what I understand, the operating costs, the fuel operating costs, are less using hydrogen fuel cell buses than it would be for operating on diesel buses. Now, with a caveat in that the infrastructure has been paid for by grants from the U.S. government and the state government to help foster the development of this technology.
Didn't Governor Schwarzenegger try to, weren't there proposals about setting up hydrogen fuel stations across the state of California?
Absolutely. Governor Schwarzenegger had a strong connection to the environmental community and really saw hydrogen as the pathway that it is to a zero emission sort of mobility world.
Can you give us an update on those efforts?
To be frank, the first 3 years of the Obama administration were very difficult for the hydrogen forces. I think it's 2003 was the State of the Union address that George Bush gave and talked about a hydrogen future, and your child today will be driving a hydrogen car. And sort of the way politics goes, sometimes when a Democratic administration comes in, they look at some of the ideas the Republican administration beforehand and they poo-poo them and walk away from them because it's not their idea, you know, sort of a not invented by me type thing, or not invented here syndrome. And most notably, Secretary Chu was not a proponent of hydrogen and talked down hydrogen as not being ready. But Secretary Chu has kind of flipped over the past year, and he's seen the advantages of hydrogen and the near-term value of hydrogen to the economy and the long-term, I would say, inevitability of the hydrogen economy and how close the vehicle guys really are today to having a viable fuel cell vehicle on the road. When I say viable, I mean something that can sell sort of in the luxury car market for $50,000 to $70,000.
So the government efforts are, they it sounds like they've kind of, for over the last decade, they've gone up and down.
That's right.
But let's talk about some of the private industry. Let's just stick to the car industry. Where are the big auto manufacturers? Are they starting to dip their toes into the hydrogen pond, so to speak?
The Fords, the Daimlers, the Mercedes, the Toyotas, the Hondas, and I don't want to miss anybody, but everybody is involved in the business. They've spent billions on hydrogen vehicles because they know they can make a car that uses less materials and uses less energy to produce. And in a world of diminishing resources and higher energy costs, trying to drive your costs down is the name of the game. And if, you know, with an internal combustion engine, you've got pistons and cylinders and rings and all kinds of things that have to be machined out of metal that take lots of energy to make that stuff. If you've got an electric vehicle that just has an electric motor and some controls, and a fuel cell and a hydrogen storage tank, it's a lot less parts, it's a lot less manufacturing costs, the factory's smaller, it's much more recyclable, all that stuff. One more thing about platinum. We hear about platinum in the fuel cell, but there's just a little bit more platinum in a fuel cell than there is in a catalytic converter. Platinum never goes away. It's infinitely recyclable. So, you know, there's still a few challenges between now and, say, 2050, when we have, say, hydrogen cars, hydrogen-powered cars are ubiquitous. But we're on the pathway, and the OEMs know it, and they're all waiting in the wings to deploy cars at the first available opportunity.
And when we talk about hydrogen cars in 2050, could those be electric vehicles powered by hydrogen batteries?
No, they're going to be battery electric vehicles with regenerative braking, and they'll have a supplemental power supply from a fuel cell, and the fuel cell will get its chemical energy from a hydrogen storage on board. And you'll have hydrogen, and you'll pull up to the fuel station, and you'll recharge your hydrogen storage canister in a matter of 3 or 4 minutes, and then you'll be on the way. And when you get 5 kilograms of hydrogen, that's equivalent of 75 kilowatt hours of power. And it really is the way to make electric vehicles practical in the marketplace.
Well, it's a fascinating topic, and I hope you come back again soon to discuss it. The founder of Boyd Hydrogen, Robert Boyd, thanks so much for being my guest on SeaChange Radio.
Thank you very much, Alex, for the time.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Curtis Mayfield, The Monsters of Folk, and Dolly Parton. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.